This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
It's a Nerdy Legion comics podcast, so to speak. Ba-dum-bum.
So
nothing is safe, so be careful, Ronnie.
Hey Jay, how's it going?
Dennis, going well.
All right, so welcome listeners. We're ready for another episode of Best of the Rest.
Yes.
So tonight, Jay and I are going to be talking about the Hard Case Crime series from Titan Comics. I think they've been out maybe for about a year now. Has it been a year or has it been about like 9 months at the beginning of this year?
Well, this is where it gets a little bit confusing because I started doing some research on Hard Case Crime. And I found out that it's really Hard Case Crime with the same logo that they have actually started in 2004, and they were doing hard-boiled crime novels.
Kind of like the old pulps?
Yeah, like the old, you know, pulps from the 50s and 60s. Raymond Chandler, some of the great classic hard-boiled fiction writers. And they were doing this, and at some point, I think a year to 2 years ago, they started going into comics. And some of the comic books, as far as I can tell, they're taking their comic book versions of the original prose books, novels, but there are some original comic books that they're doing along with it. And at some point, again, I haven't figured this out either, because I tried to do this research, but I couldn't find it, when Titan Comics, which is a British comic book company, when they started licensing Hard Case Crime, the Hard Case Crime imprint was not originally part of Titan Comics. So I don't know what their association or business dealings are there, but it really doesn't matter. But it's one of those things. I tried to research it and it just got more confusing as I went along.
Yeah, I think I looked it up, and when I did, it was pulling up those pulp ones, and I was kind of getting confused whether or not, well, where's these pulps coming back? And then you see the dates and everything. So, yeah, my familiarity is only with the Titan releases, and I think so far that has been The Assignment, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which has ended, and then The Girl Who Played with Fire, which is the sequel. Yes. And Normandy Gold, correct? And I know there's some additional titles coming out here in the next couple of months.
And as far as I can tell, The Assignment is finished as well. It was three issues back early in the year.
Yes, I found issue one. I think thanks for you, but I cannot find issues two or three anywhere.
I know they're available on Comixology, and I haven't. I don't think they're on Hoopla, but you and I are both now on that. Yes, it's a great, if you're not familiar with Hoopla, it's a digital service that's offered through libraries. So you check your local public library and see if they're have an association with Hoopla, and you can download ebooks, both prose, and they also have comic books, and they have a pretty good selection of comic books I've found.
And they also have recent ones I was noticing on there. Some stuff like from once they get the trade paperback. I actually signed up for it this past weekend, and I noticed there was a book being offered on it that had just come out the week prior.
I think so. I do know that all three issues of Normandy Gold are out there, and issue three is less than a month out. Has been out.
Does it have a parental warnings on it?
I didn't look that closely, so I don't know.
Because as we will discuss, they are hard case crime
yes.
books.
Yeah.
And there is nudity and swearing in them.
Yes. And for Paul Tessner's sake, there may be a occasional wrinkly penis. So you may want to watch out for that.
Yeah, but Hoopla's great. The only thing is the mileage may vary on your library.
Yes. It's because the library has to pay a fee for each book that's downloaded. So the library sets the limit to the number of books you can do per month. I know for me, it's 4 per month. I think Paul said he has 5 per month. You have 10.
Yes, I can check out 10 items a month. Now, that includes like books, audiobooks, movies, whatever the item is. So, yeah, I can do 10 of them. So, I actually downloaded the first 4 volumes of Sandman the other night because I only got the final chapters and that, the Kindly ones, back when it was originally being published, and I've always meant to go back and read them. So, I'm going to use Hoopla to finally read the Sandman.
Very nice.
And then we'll see what else after that, because I still have 6 more things I can download this month. And it resets at the since I did it last week, I can do those 10 in the next 2 weeks. And then at the beginning of October, I get another 10.
Yes, that was my first question was, all right, is it go by calendar month or month based on when you joined? Like if you joined September 17th. Do you have 10 titles between the September 17th and October 17th? I'm pretty sure it's calendar month.
No, for me, it's calendar months. They specifically laid that out.
For me.
So yes, I'm doing that. I am a long holdout on digital comics, but it starts to get expensive after a while. So I am dipping my toe into the digital comic experience. Now, I will say Hoopla does not have guided view,
does
correct?
Does not, no.
So, I think that is the only thing. But, once I got on there and I found the selection, I found out what was offering, Hoopla is a very nice thing. So, just go to your public library. All you need is a library card. If they're up with Hoopla, then you just download the app, put in your 10-digit, library card number, and you're off and running. You just need to find out what they're limiting you to be able to download.
It's a very good service, and I know it's coming in handy for both you and I, because especially now that we're doing this podcast, we're reading a lot of number one issues of new independent comics, and at $3.99, sometimes $4.99 a shot, it doesn't take many to it really starts getting expensive. And this is a way of trying out some things that you may or may not continue with. And it gives our listeners also, if some of what we talk about is available on Hoopla, then they can go and check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's like, and some of these hard case crime books are $5.99. Like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, they were $5.99. But as we will discuss, they were about twice the size of your regular comic.
At least. If not more.
The value was there on them.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
All right. So how do you want to dive into this? Do we want to talk about the books in particular? We want to spoil them, or we just kind of want to get our impressions and, kind of the settings and the genre and what we thought about the books?
Well, we can talk a little bit about, I think, each book.
Yeah. Okay. So how about we start with The Assignment? I think that was actually the first one of these that came out that we're familiar with from Titan. Right. And I think it came out in January. It was either late 2016 or early 2017. But I think it's set in modern times, and you're following an assassin for hire. And I guess it's got an interesting premise because it starts out as The Assignment, but I think when I was trying to find the third book and all that, the title eventually changes to The Reassignment.
Yes. And which, given what happens in here, that Reassignment makes more sense, the title.
Yes, it does. And I want to find books 2 and 3 so I can figure out how the hell what happened at the end of book 1 happened.
Yes, there's a big cliffhanger in there that Well, just kind of go into it. You know, the way this book opens, we see this character who's in a hospital, and it's the panels are focused in just on this person's eyes, and the eyes open, and they're distinctly female-looking eyes. And with each panel, it's like the camera panning back, and we see the head of this person, and her face is completely wrapped up in bandages except for the eyes. And as the scene kind of further expands, this person's looking in the mirror, and then we have a flashback to a fashion show in New York that happened some months earlier before the beginning of the book. And this man who's turns out to be the assassin for hire is at this fashion show watching the show. And afterwards, the designer who the show was showcasing his work goes back to his dressing room, and this assassin goes back and takes him out.
I think he owed some money, or he stole some money.
It wasn't clear on that, I didn't think, but he had gotten some money inappropriately.
Yes. So he fulfills that assignment, and then, you know, he catches his plane, or he gets paid, and then next you see him, I think, taking a flight to L.A.
And he sets
up. Oh, San Francisco. That's it. I knew it was a California city. San Francisco, and just sets up in this seedy hotel, pays for cash, and just kind of waits there. And then he's met by some individuals that want to hire him for his next job.
Correct. He meets with a gentleman called Gleason, who's apparently his contact, who puts him in contact with his prospective clients. And we get the assassin's first name at this point. It's Frank. That's all we know is his first name is Frank. So he agrees to work for this character, Jin Dao, who wants him to kill someone who stole some money from him. And he agrees to do that.
Yeah, and I guess in the conversation you end up finding out that this Jin Dao hardly ever goes out, but he came out to meet because apparently Frank is the best of the best. And so, you know, if you're going to do that, you need to meet face to face. So you're kind of the conversation gives his background and what he's thought of in, I guess, the criminal community about his skill set and, you know, his business dealings.
Yes. And he's very surly. He's wanting to hire Frank as an assassin, but he's insulting him. He's talking down, being very condescending, and Frank's agreeing to do the job, but he's not like, there's no love lost between these two characters.
No.
And then we have a scene, kind of the scene shifts, that he goes off and he's waiting, I guess, for the particulars about who the person is he's going to be taking out, and he goes sitting in a bar and he meets a woman, and they start chatting up a conversation. She's very standoffish at first about, you know, I'm not here to look for any sort of relationship. But they end up having a tete-a-tete, so to speak. And she starts kind of warming up to him. Even though she says she didn't want a relationship, she gives him her number. But he tells her, he said, I'm not going to be in town long, and I've got one specific job to do, and then I'm out. Then I was kind of confused at the next point as to what exactly happened. But this Jin Dao calls him, and he ends up going to meet them back at this seedy hotel. And I wasn't clear. It doesn't really say why or what the premise was of why they wanted to meet with him. But it becomes clear once he gets there. And it's not good. It is not good.
Yeah. So, yeah, they end up in a firefight. I don't have it in front of me. I can't remember if Frank kills them or whatever, but Frank gets injured.
Frank kills the henchman that Jin Dao brought with him, but he doesn't kill Jin Dao. In fact, He ends up getting the worst of this little gunfire.
Yes.
Gun battle. And he blacks out. So the last panel of this is just him being totally blacked out and waking up in the hospital at some point. And this is apparently some weeks later, and has no memory of what has transpired in the last several weeks.
Yeah, and then you find out the woman that you saw at the beginning of the book is Frank.
Yes, which is...
He's been gender reassigned.
I understand that's the correct clinical term now. Instead of sex change, it's gender reassignment.
So, yes, now the interest is peaked, and you need to... And I'm assuming the next couple of issues follow along with what happened, why it happened, and the repercussions of what happened.
Right, because that's where this first issue ends. It's just boom, right there with that revelation. And you're not saying, there's a lot missing in that time period between the end of that gunfight and him waking up being reassigned. It's an interesting book. I really want to read the rest of it and find out what happened.
Yes, and since I've got the floppy, I kind of want to complete the collection of floppy, but I may have to like hoopla it or something just so I can finish it up or find some other source for it.
And as far as artwork, it's pretty standard comic book style.
I don't know. Parts of it were kind of... Did it remind you of... let me see if I can pronounce his name correctly. Sekonovich? Or Sekovich? Or maybe the covers did. And he might have done the covers.
I can't remember. The cover I have was done by Faye Dalton. So I've got it in front of me. I can see that.
But I mean from his 80s stuff, not his current stuff. And not when he got really abstract, like with his New Mutants and later Moon Knight stuff. Maybe some earlier stuff when he started experimenting with his style.
Right. I didn't read it, and when I read it, I didn't think of any particular artist. It didn't come to mind that, this reminds me of so-and-so's work. But it's... it's not loose or very abstract. It's not hyper detailed. It's what I call just comic book standard, I guess.
Well, the colors are kind of gritty. I will say that. So the colors do convey that's when we say it's a seedy hotel room, the colors feel like that. The coloring feels like that.
Correct.
So, I thought it was a really well-done book. I enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to trying to find issues 2 and 3 and finishing up the story. So I think the next books to come out were The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So, I guess this is yet another adaption. We've had the movie adaption. You had the books first, then you've had the movie adaption. And I guess this is the comic adaption.
The original novel was by a Swedish author Stieg Larsson. And I when I first saw this, I knew something was familiar. When I started reading the book, it immediately came back to me. I'd seen the film for this a couple of years ago, and it stars the male lead in it is Daniel Craig, who's the current James Bond.
So was he the superstar Bond journalist? Okay. Yes. I do not know how to pronounce all the Swede names, so I'm going to refer to them as other descriptors. But yeah, I've never read the book and I never saw the movie, so I actually had no idea about what the story was about or anything in it. So I kind of read through it with, not knowing what was going to be on the next page. So, I enjoyed it for that. My only thing is I thought sometime, I was kind of curious to the anatomy of the individuals in the book, because sometimes I thought their heads were a bit bigger than what their bodies could support. It seemed a little disproportionate, but I don't know. But that didn't take away from it anything. But I mean, it's really this would be more of your detailed comic art for sure.
It's more detailed, but it's also, I agree with you. In some cases, it's not overly realistic, especially the way they render his faces. And the artist on this is someone I've never heard of.
Well, it's probably a European artist. I mean, I don't think it took away from the story or the book or anything. It's just different than what I'm used to seeing here with your traditional U.S. comics. Which is the point, to get out and try different things.
But sort of the premise of this book, how it begins, is this journalist, whose name is Mikhail Blomqvist, who's a journalist, apparently a well-known journalist in Sweden,
an investigative journalist,
who has run into some bad trouble. He was investigating the dealings of one of the wealthiest men in Sweden, and it turned on him. They were able to implicate him and try to disprove all of his evidence. So that it looks like he's been guilty of libel, accusing this businessman of illegal dealings that couldn't be proved. So he's actually been convicted in civil court for libeling this businessman. So his career is in jeopardy.
And the reputation of the paper that him and his partner have founded. So was the name of the paper? I'm trying to remember.
Which is the overall title of all these books. Like, if you look at the cover of this, it's called Millennium, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And the second book, second series, was Millennium, The Girl Who Played with Fire.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the situation. So he's trying to distance himself from his paper so that it can survive, you know, the negative press. And I think he's approached by an individual in a family that's been prominent in Sweden, very wealthy for many, many generations, that he wants him to come and write the family history, but secretly he wants to investigate the disappearance of his niece from 30, 40 years ago?
30, something around 30 years.
So this family lives on an island off somewhere in Sweden. So he's off on sabbatical to write this family history under the guise of family history, but investigating this disappearance, kidnapping, murder, whatever it could be. Because what was interesting was the reason the guy that the individual that hired him, the uncle, his niece every year for his birthday would send him a pressed flower. And ever since her disappearance for the past 30 years, somebody has been sending him a pressed flower, taunting him that, hey, I kidnapped your daughter and I did all this and you don't know who I am. And here's a pressed flower to prove that, you know, I did it and I know about you and you don't know who I am.
Yes. And this gentleman, whose name is Heinrich, he's convinced that it's the murderer, that she's been murdered, and it's the murderer that is sending him these flowers just to, you know, make it more painful for him, to keep the memory alive. So Blomqvist, who is, because of his reputation, has gotten the nickname Super Blomqvist, which he hates. He despises it. And everybody keeps calling him that. He keeps telling people, don't call me that name, but they do. And it's sort of a running gag through the book.
Yeah. And I guess the other aspect that they kind of keep highlighting in the book is that he's got his partner and her husband have, or somebody he knows has a, they have an open marriage, and so he's the open, he's her open part of her marriage.
Yeah, it's his female associate at the paper. I think they sort of,
yeah,
Blomqvist and her sort of co-run the paper. Yes, she's married, but he's got an association with her, and the husband knows about it, and everyone's fine with it. So
everybody's fine and happy with it. And I think one of the funny scenes in one of the books is when they're at the table, and is it a niece or the woman's daughter kind of ask about the relationship, and it's kind of like, oh, okay. Oh,
she comes right out and asks if they've had a three-way sexual encounter. To which appalls the child's mother, but Blomqvist is like, oh, you know, no big deal. No, we haven't had that. But it's like, I don't know. I guess those things aren't as shocking in Sweden as they are maybe here in the United States.
I guess. It just made for some interesting reads and, you know, some of the cultural, you know, things and why it's nice to read things outside of your comfort zone to kind of experience different
right.
cultures.
Now, the other story, other storyline that's kind of going on along with this is this story of a young girl, Lisbeth Salander, who actually does private investigations. And she has worked for the gentleman who is sort of he works for Heinrich as well. I'm not really sure what kind of, he is just sort of kind of a front man for the businesses. So he's worked with this girl, Elizabeth, who apparently has immaculate and very developed computer hacking skills.
Well, her and her partner, I mean, you kind of get that eventually, but at the beginning, it kind of seems like her friend has these hacking skills and she's using him. And she just does the footwork and the investigative part and connects right. the dots. But later on, you're right, it seems that now she's developed the hacking skills. And I guess one of the things we left out is like Heinrich's payment to Blomqvist is information on the individual that sued him for libel to kind of turn the tables on him. So that's his ultimate goal in taking it. It wasn't for money or anything, and he can't tell anybody else about what it is he's doing or the payment he's going to receive.
Yes, Heinrich has told him that you do this for me, regardless of what you find out, whether you solve it, the murder or not, I will give you the documentation you need to take down this businessman that has screwed you over. So he's got strong motivations there.
Yes. And so I think we go halfway through the book where we've got these two lines going where Blomqvist is digging into stuff, running into dead ends. Then he finds something and pulls another thread, and he's kind of going through it. And then Lisbeth, you meet, I got the impression she was older than 18, but she has a guardian.
Yes, she was put in into a mental health institution at age 12, I think is what they said, for violence and some other actions. So she's essentially, she's been released, but as part of her release, she's a ward of the state. Or in other words, she's having to go under the care of a guardian. And the guardian, the man who's been her guardian for a number of years, early on in this book, has a stroke. And so they assign her a new guardian who is... say he's a vile human being is sort of understatement.
Yes, because her previous guardian seemed like more of a father figure. She really respected him, looked up to him, had, you know, kind of, you know, an emotional attachment to him. Then he had a stroke, and now she's gone over to this other individual that, you know, I'm going to only pay you out so much, and you better do things for me, or I'm not going to give you your allowance. And, you know, basically just sexually assaults her.
What finally brings them together is Blomqvist has been spending weeks on this investigation. He's not getting anywhere, except he finds a diary written by Harriet with these names and numbers, odd numbers, that he can't decipher, make any heads or tail of. And he's talking with Heinrich or his associate that works for Heinrich saying, you know, I need some help with investigating or trying to find these numbers. And the guy says, I know the exact person you need. So he brings in Lisbeth and introduces her to Mikhail Blomkvist. So now she's working on this case as well to try to decipher what these names and numbers mean.
Mm-hmm. And so she sets up shop in the cottage, you know, and they're working together, doing leads. They're kind of investigating other members of the family, you know, digging into the family's past. And, you know, just now you're into your typical, you know, detective kind of story. And so I think at some point they've discovered something. And apparently, like, one of the family members is an, you know, ex-Nazi sympathizer, and he's been on the island since World War II. He doesn't leave his cabin except for walks, you know, strolling around the island sometimes at night, and he's in his old Nazi uniform. And so when was this story written? Was this written in the 80s or when was it? I know the comics come out now. That's an adaptation of it, but
when the book was written.
So, you know, that kind of took me as a surprise, kind of getting into that part of the story. But then I got, okay, well, this was probably written in the 70s or the 80s. So, you know, okay, there you go. So at some point they're investigating something and they start getting shot at. And they think this family member, that's the Nazis doing it. So they break into his house, you know, and then he confronts them and catches them. Then he sits there and proves like, no, I didn't. You know, you can take a look at my gun. It hasn't been fired in so long. And plus, anyway, the bullets don't match it from the type. And by the way, I wouldn't have missed.
And it starts to come together. You know, we start getting in from seeing information about. There's a number of unsolved murders that have happened over the last 30 or 40 years. That began to start looking like they're committed by the same person that may tie in with Harriet.
Yeah, and I will say you start seeing flashbacks, and I didn't get the flashbacks at first in the book, in the comic. So you're seeing flashbacks to these previous murders, and I didn't realize there were previous murders. I thought they were just sequences of the niece as we were going through it. So it wasn't there towards the end that I kind of figured out, oh, okay, so now we've had a history of the past however many years there's been these murders. You know, this is how they're tied together. And I guess I don't know if you've read, anybody else has read the book or seen the movie, but maybe we won't give away the clues and all that, but he kind of pieces together about what exactly it is. He gets captured by the killer. Elizabeth figures it out kind of soon, about at the same time that he's captured, and she comes to his rescue, and, you know, they solve the case basically. And if you want to know how it's solved and the resolution of that, you need to go get the books and read
them. What's the interesting twist at the end that what Elizabeth does? She does something very unusual.
We won't Yes. So this series ended up being, I mean, so these, there was two issues to this. They were both $5.99, but I think each issue had about 3 to 4 pages of a typical, you know, 22-page comic, wouldn't you say? Maybe even more
pages of content. So we're talking 2.5 to 3 times the normal length of a comic book.
So $5.99, 6 books for $12. I mean, it's almost the size of a trade paperback of 4 to 6 issues for $12. And these are the floppies, so those are probably going to get collected into a trade that's maybe even cheaper than that, or probably around the same price. But I think I think this series was an excellent value. I never read the books, didn't see the movie, but now I'm intrigued about a story, and I may go do both now.
I wouldn't recommend it. The movie's really good, and it's like I say, depends on how much. You know, I like Daniel Craig. He's actually my favorite Bond over the last few years. So he does really good. And I don't know the actress's name, but she's really good in it.
The only thing I know about that movie is the 9 Inch Nails version of Immigrant Song. And the only reason I know that is because they played it on commercials when they were doing the post Battlestar Galactica movie, Blood and Chrome. They were playing that on an unofficial commercial, and I heard it, and that was awesome and all that. And anytime I can talk about BSG, I'm happy to talk about BSG, but this is a comics podcast.
Yes, but it's a Nerdy Legion comics podcast, which means we can...
This is true. We can get derailed as much as we want.
We're almost required to, actually. I think it's part of our contract with, you know, keeping in the tradition of the Nerdy Legion podcast and Valiant Central and all this other stuff.
So no, it was a good story. I don't know if the movie follows like it in it, but there was a lot of sex. There was Nazis. Yeah, Blomkiss gets around.
Yes, he does.
And there's no age discrimination either.
Yeah, I guess if you're well-known, high-profile investigative journalist in Sweden.
So everybody gets their just desserts in the end. Everybody, you know, it's the ending kind of gets tied up into a happy little knot. And then recently, I think in the past month or two, the first issue of the second book's come out, The Girl Who Played with Fire, and you kind of catch up with them after a year. And this seems to focus more on Elizabeth this time. Because she's been out doing stuff, traveling internationally and all that. Blomkist is, you know, was the hero after that story. He's been doing a few other things. They've got a new story they're getting in on and everything. But then you find out, so in the first two issues, so her new guardian had sexually assaulted her, and she found, and then she had a revenge on him. Well, he's trying to get out of her revenge, and she keeps threatening him. That's like, you know, you got to keep doing this. You don't tell anybody, or I'm going to just make it life worse for you. Well, he ends up being killed. And the police are after her now.
And also in this second book, The Girl Who Played with Fire, we start seeing more about her background as a child and her family.
Yeah, and why she was got committed to the state for violence and everything is because her dad was beating her mother, and she wasn't going to handle it anymore. And she was trying to defend her mother and her twin sister.
If I had her upbringing, I probably would have ended up in a mental institution as well, because it's pretty bad. It is not a happy
going. So you find out that pretty much she's been getting the short end of the stick for probably the past 10, 15 years.
Not more than that.
So through no fault of her own, you know, she's just had craps life's just crapped all over her. And that's kind of where she's at, why she's the way she is.
But anyway, another good book. I'm liking everything I'm reading out of these hard case books. But I'm also, I like the crime, noir, the hard-boiled fiction, so it's definitely something that's in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really a big crime noir kind of guy. You know, I appreciate it and I kind of like it on occasion. It's kind of like a mood for me. But, you know, I am enjoying these books, maybe because it's like I don't feel I've got to read an entire novel or I got to sit through a 2-hour show. You know, I can read the comic, and if I'm not enjoying it, I can put it down and just pick it up later. But, you know, I think, you know, the character, see, this is where not reading a book, I guess, I can't tell, but in the comics, the books, the characters all have, they definitely have all their different voices. But is that because if it's based on a novel, you know, if it was a good writer, the writer had different voices for the characters. And if you've read the novels, now you know the character voices, so it easily translates into the comic adaption.
That's very possible. I haven't really thought it in those terms, but yeah, it could be. It can be very, can be that way.
Because even the minor characters seem kind of fleshed out and are distinct personalities. And I can think that's only because, you know, since it's based on the novel allows you to expand on the characters if you read it. So yeah, I mean, there's only been one issue of The Girl Who Played with Fire, and you're kind of, you know, the first book, that's the synopsis of it. You know, Elizabeth comes back to town. She gets framed for the murder of her guardian. Blomkast hears about it, and he's trying to find her and work with her to kind of prove her innocence because she knows she can't do that, and she's just on the run. And that's the end of the first book, and we're just waiting for the second one to come out to see how it resolves itself. This one doesn't seem as much detective work or as detailed as the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, I agree, especially for Elizabeth, because we're really starting to find out about her, what's going on, because we don't know what's been going on in this past year. We do know that Blomkvist has tried several times to reach her in this year-long period, and he can't seem to locate her. And he's, you know, not understanding what's going on here.
No, because he became to really appreciate her hacking and deductive skills when they were, like, working on the island for Heinrich. So, you know, he just wants to probably use her services in his investigative journalism because he realizes how valuable they are. Because at one point, I guess in The Girl in the Dragon Tattoo, he figures out that she's been in his computer and spying on him and looking at his files and doing all that, which was kind of funny too. So, you know, kind of a warning for people. You know, it doesn't matter how secure you make things, somebody's looking at you.
Found out recently with Equifax. Yes,
Equifax.
Nothing is safe.
Yes, assume nothing is safe. Even photos on your phone. So it never surprises me about these celebrities that have these compromising photos on their phone that somebody hacks into. Assume somebody's going to get it. So yes. Somebody's going to get it. Now I'm off my soapbox. So there we are on that. So
that's all. Anyway, the last book we're going to talk about is Normandy Gold.
And I think that's your favorite of these series
so far. This is not an adaptation of a novel. This is an original comic book through the Hard Case Crime, written by Megan Abbott, with art by Allison Galen. And this one, this takes place here in the United States and in the 1970s.
Opens
up in the scene of a woman who is just hunted and is gutting an elk. And her name is Normandy Gold. And she goes into an explanation of how her parents, her father was in Second World War, I believe. It was supposed to be a boy, and they were going to name her Victory. And her dad was then killed in action on the beaches of Normandy. From the Normandy invasion, so that's why her mother named her that. And she has grown up to, at some point, I didn't get if she became the legal responsibility or just a friends with a sheriff in rural Oregon.
She left home. Ran away from home. Ended up in Oregon. Was she committing a crime or was doing something when the sheriff found her, took her under her wing and taught her survival skills, kind of a code of honor, and just became the father figure she never had.
And she ended up following in his footsteps. And now she is a sheriff.
A take no nonsense, no.
Yeah, she's tough.
No crap.
You don't mess with this woman at all. As you can see in those opening panels, because she's got no problem there. Just, you know, getting this elk that she's just hunted. And there's one scene panel where she's driving back with the carcass of this thing in the bed of her pickup truck. But she gets a call from her sister, her younger sister, that she left behind when she left home. And her sister's calling to tell her she's getting married. And turns out she's in Washington, D.C. But somebody comes and knocks on the door while she's on the phone with her sister. She doesn't hang up. She puts the phone down and goes and answers it. And Normandy gets to hear what happens to her sister. And it's not good. She's killed.
No, it's not. So Normandy has to pack up, and she goes to D.C. to investigate her sister's murder.
Right, and discovers that her sister has been a rather high-priced Washington call girl.
Yes. So she has some clients that are high up in the government, and so you put two and two together. Ah, government. Somebody's promising to marry her. Whoops. Now they've got to take care of their problem, and, you know, maybe it's a little cliche, but yeah, your corruptible government official decides that the best way to take care of the problem is to kill the problem.
Yeah.
And I forget, what's the situation with how Normandy first meets the local detective? Because she gets arrested, doesn't she not?
She just walks into the police station and demands to know what's going on with her sister. And these policemen, all of them being misogynists and sexists, start making all these inappropriate comments. And she brings out this big, about 8-inch long buck knife and threatens them. Which they finally corral her and take her and arrest her. And that's where she meets this guy, Sturgis, who actually turns out had worked her sister's case. And it was a dead end. He couldn't find any evidence. But, you know, he sympathizes with Normandy and what she's going through and offers her as much information as he can. But she's obviously, she's appreciative, but she's not going to stop there. She's not about to let stop. So she's going to find out what's going on. So this is where it really gets interesting, because she needs to find out what's happened to her sister, who was a high-priced call girl in Washington. So what better way to get in information about what she's been doing than to herself become a high-priced call girl?
Yes, and she goes deep undercover.
So to speak. Ba-dum-boom.
And goes full-on call girl. So, she doesn't pull anything. Does all the tricks. And just starts working herself through her sister's associates and clients until, as she's going through this. Now, I think issue 3 is out, and I don't know if this is going to be a 4-issue or 6-issue, so we're still through the process of her going through her sister's clients, connections, madams, and everything else to kind of get to who did this and why.
Right, and she finally just gets the identity of the person that her sister was supposedly engaged to. He turned out to be a really bizarre, really twisted guy.
Well, he's a senator too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a senator or Justice Department. I can't remember.
But anyway, she finds him and then ends up gutting him.
Yes,
and then
so you're thinking this is going to be the end of the situation. She finds...
Well, see, that's where it gets a little bizarre, because she guts him, and then she's cleaning up the mess. The maid comes in, sees her, the body, and all the blood, runs out screaming. And then she comes out, meets the detective or something, comes back, and everything's cleaned up. Right. So that sequence was kind of confusing to me.
Well, it's obviously something's bigger going on here, because she finds a guy, Cell, name is it. She brings up her sister. You know my sister, Lila. It was short for Delilah, who her sister was. And, yeah, she ends up just... She's really good with that buck knife. She is really good with that buck knife. But, yeah, she ends up killing this guy in the hotel room, trying to dispose of the body. But then the maid comes in. And she finally just more or less says, screw it. Walks out of the hotel, still carrying the knife.
Covered in blood.
Where she's arrested. Ends up back with... talking to this Detective Sturgis again. And she's ready to face the consequences. She's done what she came to do. She's gotten her revenge. She's ready to, admit what's going on and take the consequences. And then, so Sturgis, that's when he takes her back to the hotel room to look at what transpired. And there's nothing. The carpet, the bloodstained carpet is immaculately clean. The body that she put in the closet is gone.
And then a little later, there's there's a new there on the news. It shows that the senator died in an airplane crash or a waterboat crash or some so there's some accident in which he died.
Right.
Which is playing immediately, you know, soon after they get to the hotel room.
So, and Sturgis ends up telling Normandy, you know, this is big stuff. We're both in way over our heads here. Because essentially, says, I can't even arrest you now for this. Because it never happened. It never happened. There's no evidence at all. So now we see that this is going to be much bigger than what originally thought. But
well, it's moved on beyond a simple revenge story.
And Normandy is not content to just leave it where it is. She wants to find out more about what's going on. So that's how the third issue ends. You know, not her going, realizing there's going to be a lot more to this than she would originally thought.
Yeah, and I think so. These books here, so Normandy Gold's like $3.99, and I think is it regular comic size, or is there additional pages in it?
They're pretty much standard size comic books, 22, 23 pages of content.
But I think the art's in it's really good. It's a different style than the two books we've talked about. And the coloring's good. So it's standard, you know, comic book art and coloring, and the lettering's all good. And I think the story's excellent.
It's so difficult to discuss art because there's no accepted, agreed upon words or verbiage or descriptions.
Yeah.
Some people say something like, oh, it's very cartoony. Well, what does that mean? I try to avoid using words like cartoony. Yeah.
Well, I like to think of it, does the art help push the story forward? Or, you don't want panels where you can't tell what's going on. And none of the panels or the styles keep me from figuring out what's going on.
Right.
I don't look at them and go, what?
And it's consistent. You don't always get that. Sometimes you'll see a character that in two different panels on different pages, and the character doesn't look the same. And if you didn't know what was happening, if you weren't reading the dialogue, you would know that this is the same character. But it's very consistent with here. You know, Normandy looks the same in every panel. Sturgis looks the same. It's very well done, very consistent. But I'm not sure what I like about this so much about this book over the others. I think it's Normandy herself. She is such a fascinating character to me, who's, like you say, no nonsense, not going to take anything off of anybody, is willing to do literally anything to get information, as we see. I mean, she's willing to do what a lot of people would consider completely reprehensible things to get information, but it's all just like water off her back. She just does it. She gets what she needs to find out.
No, yeah. So, you know, very strong female character. Really good. And thoroughly enjoying it. Can't wait for issue 4 to come out to kind of see where the story goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know those are the three books that are currently out now. So coming later here in November, I think, we're getting The Girl Who Handcuffed Houdini.
Yes.
And then we're getting Quarry's War.
Correct.
So those will be the next ones coming out. And they look pretty good. I've already got them on my pull list for when they come out. The rest of these I've had to hunt down afterwards. But, you know, I think they were in September's previews. We might have talked about that on our previews episode about these two.
I believe we did, at least briefly.
So, I mean, looking forward to these and looking forward to where the current ongoings are going. Well, I don't guess they're ongoings, but the current books that we're in the middle of are going. And now I got to track down the assignment and the reassignment. But highly recommend the Hard Case Crime imprint. I think Titan's doing a good thing with these. And it's nice and refreshing to have something that's a different read than our, you know, the typical comics out there. Even some of the independents and the stuff are doing out there. This is just, they're just good, fun reads.
I agree.
I don't know how better to describe them. You'll enjoy them.
Well, they're really high quality. Like, as you said before, the writing is solid. The art's solid. It's very well done. They're not heavy books, but they're not lightweight either.
Well, you're getting the value for your money. Some, you know, you may look, I mean, I know we talk about it all the time, but you're going to, like the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series, you're going to sit there and see $5.99. And the first thing that's going to pop in your head, $5.99 for a comic, but they're solid, well-written, good art books, and you get 60-something pages an issue.
Right. Yeah, that was funny. When I first saw that, I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I just flipped through and counted the pages, and I'm like, well, that's got to be worth it. At least worth it picking up.
And we haven't been disappointed.
We haven't been. And if you do, like we mentioned, to go back to Hoopla, I know the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is on Hoopla.
Well,
Normandy Gold. Well,
so. At your library. What's on Hoopla at your library may not be on Hoopla at somebody else's library. That's the one thing I don't know.
Oh, I thought that was pretty consistent.
But I've only had it. I've had the app for less than a week, so I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay.
But it makes sense, since that's a novel, that the library would actually have that comic on there. What would be interesting to see is if they have Normandy Gold and, you know, some the more original material.
Right. And I don't mean to be an apologist for Hoopla, but it's really, it's really a good resource.
Hey, for free, you can't beat it. It's easier than going to the library and having to check out stuff and bring it back home.
Yes, absolutely.
So what else we got tonight, Jay? Or are we kind of winding this down?
I think that's it for tonight. I sit here and listen to the rain. Some heavy rain's coming into my area, so.
Oh, nothing wrong with that. All right, so if you want to kind of reach us, I'm at UTENGR on the Twitter machine. I think we're at BOTR on Twitter, or is there
B-O-T-R,
more
to BOTR Comics, at BOTR Comics on Twitter.
Yeah, you can see how much I use Twitter.
I'm checking it, so I will see it if you put it out there. So, and I'm at JForgets, at JForgets on Twitter.
And the email is?
BOTRcomics@gmail.com.
Okay, so we haven't moved over to the Nerdy Legion.
Not email. Yet. I don't, it's in the works, but for right now, that's where we're at.
Well, I think it was moving to a new host and some other things, so I think we're going to let all that get settled down, and then we're going to make our switch.
Yes. Martin has all sorts of things in the work.
Oh, he's always got something in work. I think the man sleeps an hour a night. If that.
An hour? I thought it was an hour a week, but I may be wrong. And just a reminder, you can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. And if you have the time and would like to, leave us a review on iTunes. We would appreciate that.
Oh, yes, because that makes us easier to find for people that are out there searching for something to listen to.
Yes.
Well, I think we can wrap this up. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Good evening.
Terrible.
That was pathetic. Boom.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.